Hi, this is Ed McNamara, and welcome to the first segment of Home Buyer Education by Bean & Dunn Real Estate. Bean & Dunn is certified by the Oklahoma Home Buyer Education Agency, OHEA, and we've provided education to hundreds of home buyers and sellers who are looking to get an advantage when it comes to negotiating the best deal. In this segment, we will discuss the loan process, which we feel is the first step in beginning the home buying journey. For the experienced buyer or seller, this will serve as a good refresher and let you know what the inexperienced buyer or seller is being taught. Bean & Dunn is located in Oklahoma City, but our principles are usable no matter where you live. There are basic steps to getting the best deal in anything, not just in real estate. The first is to get educated and know what others are doing. This gives you at least an even position when you begin your negotiation. In the perfect world, you may be negotiating with someone that has not taken the time to get educated. And of course, we feel that you'll begin your offer from an extreme advantage position. This is the first segment, and it's approximately 45 minutes long. And also, I'd like to ask you to please take a moment to provide feedback on the class for us at iTunes when you finish listening to it. And it's constructive criticism. We're looking to improve our course. If we're doing something wrong, we'd like to know that too. If we're doing it right, please take the time to tell us. Also, if you would, we think we've covered everything, but obviously there's questions out there that may still remain. So take the moment to send us an email, let us know what your questions are, and we'll address those questions and have a question and answer period at the end of each segment. So let's hear from you. Okay, let's get started. Today we're going to talk about the loan process, and as a intro to that, I'd like to talk a little bit about calculating income, because it's important for everyone to understand how a lender is going to look at that, and it's good to know what you can afford before you get out there and start looking at houses over what you can afford. Now, what I've always said is a good ballpark is about three times of your gross yearly income or gross monthly, but it's your gross income. So three times your gross yearly income is typically what you should be able to afford to buy. So if you make $100,000 a year, basically you should be looking no more than $300,000 purchase. But that's just a ballpark. You certainly want to try to get the calculations done to make sure that you're within a reasonable amount of what your maximum purchase is. Example I've got here is, let's say a buyer makes $25 per hour and works 46 hours a week. A lender, number one, is only going to use a 40-hour week. They're not going to use the 46 because most standards, the 6 hours is considered overtime, and a lender would have to get the employer to agree to say that the overtime is likely to continue for at least 2 years. And most lenders don't want to do that. They're not going to guarantee any employee overtime over that long of a period. So most lenders will just say, okay, great, you work 46 hours, but we're really only going to use a 40-hour work week to calculate your income. So if you take the 40 hours times the $25 per hour, that's $1,000 a week, $52,000 a year, divided by 12, and that's $4,333 per month. For those that get paid on a salary and get paid every 2 weeks, just take your gross monthly income off your pay stub and multiply that times 26, divide by 12, and it should come out basically the same number. So if we go from the standpoint of someone earning $4,333 a month, now we have to consider, okay, what kind of ratios we're going to look at. And I'm going to use a conventional loan. FHA is a little bit higher, but conventional are 28% of gross income can be used to purchase, to make a house payment. And 36% can go to make a house payment and other debt. So a house payment and a car payment, house payment, car payment, and credit card payment, whatever the combination might be. So we're looking at the ratios of 28% and 36%. In the case that we just talked about with $4,333 a month of income, 28% of that allows for a maximum of a $1,213 a month principal and interest payment. Principal, interest, taxes, and insurance. So it's called PITI. So that's your maximum outgo on a house payment, including taxes and insurance, based on that $4,333 gross per month. To calculate the 36%, take the same numbers, that allows for a maximum of $1,519 of payment plus debt. So you take $4,333 times 36%, that comes up to $1,519 house payment and other debt combined. So if you had a $1,213 house payment, the maximum you could have of other debt is $300. So if, for instance, you had a $450 car payment, your maximum house payment would be the $1,519 minus $450, or $1,109. You follow me there? So total combined debt cannot exceed $1,519. So if you've got $450 in a car payment, the most your house payment can be is $1,109, because $450 and $1,109 equals $1,519. So let's say, okay, you know you can make a $1,109 a month house payment, but what does that equate to in a purchase price? Well, you need a financial calculator for this little calculation, so, and you can reverse calculate it. But the first thing you need to do is, when you're looking at purchase price, you've got to strip out the taxes and the insurance, because that's not really what you're looking is loan payment. So of that $1,109, probably about $200 of that is going to be for your taxes and insurance. And I'm talking about Oklahoma. It's going to vary by state. So you take your $200 out, that leaves you with a $909 principal and interest payment per month maximum. You, in your financial calculator, you want to put in your down payment, so you subtract out 5%. And in most financial calculators, it's going to say percentage of down payment or numbers of dollars. So you put in 5% for down payment, $909 a month for a payment, and then 6% interest rate over 30 years, and you hit calculate. And on a financial calculator, that's going to come up as a maximum purchase price of around $160,000. So you know, with a gross monthly income of around $4,000 and $450 a month of debt, your maximum purchase price is going to be around $160. Now, when you go see a lender is going to be a little bit more fine-tuned than this, because they're going to look at some other factors, credit scores, and so on and so forth, and they may push those ratios a little bit for you. So rather than using a 28%, you may get away with doing a 30 or a 31% based on a very high credit score and a low amount of debt. So there may be some offset on one of those ratios, or they may push your debt to income ratio to 41% rather than use 36. So it's better to get in and sit down with a lender, and they can tell you exactly what you can qualify for based on your gross income and credit. So it's good to combine both of those together and get that number from a lender before you get out into the marketplace and start looking at houses. Okay, now that we've got a basic understanding on what a lender is going to use to calculate your income, and a basic understanding of how much you can afford when it comes to purchasing a home, what I'd like to talk about next is the loan process itself. There are several things that we can talk about when it comes to loans. Number one I'd like to address is the type of lenders, the type of loans, the loan application itself. I like to talk about an appraisal versus an inspection, and then what to expect when you get your final approval. Type of lenders typically include banks, savings and loans, mortgage brokers, mortgage bankers, credit unions, and those type of lenders. And the a bank is a good place to start. The banks, local banks here, most of them do mortgages. They have very good rates, low fees, and so on and so forth. I haven't seen too many savings and loans lately. We do have one here in Oklahoma City, but I don't think they do a lot of business. There's mortgage bankers or companies that have a loan officer originate it. They process it locally, they underwrite it, and then they actually fund their own loans. A broker, on the other hand, maybe a loan officer, takes the loan application, and then third parties process it, underwrite it, and fund it. So you may only deal with the loan officer as far as doing the loan, but all your paperwork might be mailed to Arizona for processing. And that's okay. I personally feel it's a lot easier if you're working with a local lender, that you don't have to be, number one, on an 800 number, trying to talk to the processor somewhere half across the United States, and then you're having to mail everything rather than being able to deal with someone here locally. Credit unions are more and more active in the mortgage business, and I always typically tell people, if you belong to a credit union, it might be a good place to start, because their fees are typically low. It's a little bit more friendly, personal atmosphere, and sometimes you can get some pretty good deals at credit unions. So don't overlook the fact of a credit union, although in some cases they may act like a broker rather than a banker, because they're probably not going to service that loan. They may process it, they probably won't underwrite it, and they're not going to fund it. So depending on the credit union, I did a deal, I had a sale with Navy Federal Credit Union, man, that was the smoothest deal. The buyer was real happy, it got really great rate, and I don't think there was any fees at all. So that would be, if you're a member of the Navy Federal Credit Union, might be somewhere you want to start. Type of loans include conventional, FHA, VA, and non-conforming. On a conventional loan, you're looking at loans that are able to be sold on the secondary market that Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac are willing to purchase and get the lenders back into the business of generating new loans. FHA is a government-sponsored loan through HUD, VA through the Veterans Administration. And non-conforming are typically loans that don't meet any one of those other three categories. No rules. For instance, a type of loan would be non-conforming if you were self-employed and really didn't have the income on your tax returns. You could go to a lender and say, listen, I need a stated income loan. So you'll go in there and say, I make $4,333 a month, but don't have to provide any documentation to prove that you make that much money. So that would be a non-conforming type loan. On a conventional loan, typically you're going to need a 5% down payment. There are other types of loans, but I'm going to talk about generalities here. With a 5% down payment, you do have private mortgage insurance on that loan. And the PMI on a conventional loan is more expensive than it is on an FHA loan. There is no PMI on a VA loan, but it's a little bit, I think the factor they use these days is 0.79. So if you were to take your monthly payment times 0.79, that's going to be your monthly PMI payment. So if you have a $1,000 a month payment, $79 is going to be PMI. Your qualifying ratios on a conventional loan are 28% and 36%, as we just talked about in calculating the income. And maximum loan amounts vary by state. In Oklahoma, it's $333,700. So just double. You have to make sure you understand and ask what the maximum loan amount, if that's going to be a problem. Anything over that, you can still get a loan, but it's considered a jumbo loan, be a different type of rate, possibly different type of down payment. But I'm pretty sure you can get a 5% down jumbo loan as well. FHA, minimum of 3% investment is required. That's not necessarily a 3% down payment. It's a combination of down payment and closing costs. So you have to have 3% of your own money involved in the transaction, is what FHA is saying. If you paid all your own closing costs, your down payment is 2.25%, and then your closing costs make up the rest of that 3% investment required. There is upfront mortgage insurance premium on an FHA loan of 1.5%. That's typically financed into the loan. You can pay it. I've never seen anybody pay cash upfront for the upfront mortgage insurance premium. Depending on how long you have your loan, there may be some of the mortgage insurance premium refunded at the end of the loan period if you sold the home. So let's say you had the home and you lived in there for 3 years. There could be a percentage of that upfront mortgage insurance premium refunded to you by HUD. And in fact, if you've ever seen those newspapers that come out once in a while in your local communities claiming that the government has money for you, a lot of it comes from that upfront mortgage insurance premium that people have sold their homes, moved on, did not provide a good forwarding address, and government's got this money. In fact, you can go on the HUD site, and they've got a page there where you can put in your name and information, and it'll tell you whether or not you've got any money that the government owes you. The ratios for an FHA loan are 29 and 41% versus the 28 and 36 on a conventional loan. These are probably a little bit more stringent under HUD guidelines than the 28 and 36 on conventional. Most lenders are going to stick pretty close to the 29 and 41. Maximum purchase price in Oklahoma County specifically, for FHA as of this recording is $200,160. There is a restriction on how much the seller can contribute in an FHA transaction. So if you've asked the seller to pay closing costs, now the seller cannot pay a down payment. The seller can pay closing costs and prepaid items being taxes and insurance, but it's capped at 6%. So if a $100,000 purchase, the most the seller can contribute is $6,000. VA loans are also government loans, as are FHA. VA does not have a down payment, but you still have closing costs and prepaids. So there's a lot of veterans that come and say, oh, no, the VA pays those. VA doesn't pay anything. In fact, VA doesn't even fund a VA loan. VA guarantees a VA loan. So you still have your standard closing costs and prepaids like you would on any other loan, even though you're a veteran. The VA does not have a PMI insurance, but they do have what's called a funding fee. For a first-time veteran, active duty, or retiree veteran, the funding fee is 2.2%. Subsequent users, somebody has used their VA before, paid off that loan, and had their full entitlement reinstated, the funding fee goes to 3.3%. The figures are different for Reserve and National Guard. The funding fees are actually a little bit higher, and the eligibility requirements are different. In fact, the color of the certificate's even different. So if you're Reserve or National Guard or Reserve, you need to check with the VA to see what your specific requirements are for VA entitlement. It's going to be time in service, and it's going to be possibly tied to a campaign like Desert Storm, Vietnam, or whatever. If you got out of the military and you have a service-connected disability, there is no funding fee for a disabled veteran. So that 2.2% funding fee or the 3.3% funding fee is waived if you've got a service-connected disability. And it can be a 0%. So you don't necessarily have to be receiving a monthly check from the VA to have that funding fee waived. The ratio calculation for VA loans are slightly different. There is no 28 or 29%. They use what's called a residual income. How much money do you have left over after you make your house payment of your monthly check? But the back-end ratio is the same. It's 41%. So the most that combined house payment and debt can be 41% of your gross monthly income. On a VA loan, the seller can pay up to 4% towards the buyer's closing costs or prepaids. There's no limit there. Of course, there's no down payment, so we don't have to worry about that. And in reality, there is no maximum VA loan. Basically, it's got to make sense to the VA. When you go to your lender and you tell them you want a $350,000 VA loan, they may look at you funny, but VA may fund it. So just see what you can do. On a non-conforming loan, you're typically going to have a higher down payment, 10 to 25%, depending on the type of loan that you want. There is no PMI on non-conforming loans. That's not required. The ratios are non-standard as well, and there's no set ratio for a non-conforming loan. It's all based on risk, so an underwriter is going to look at it from a risk standpoint, not necessarily from a ratio standpoint. A maximum loan depends on your income. I mean, if you make $4,000 a month, the most you're going to be able to borrow is probably $140,000, simply because interest rates are going to be higher as well. So if you're at 6% on a conforming loan, you're probably going to be at 8% on a non-conforming loan. Obviously, that's going to be driven by your credit score as well in your credit history. It's always a good idea to compare lenders before you make a final decision which lender you're going to go with. Fannie Mae publishes some excellent books. One of them is Choosing the Mortgage That's Right for You. You can find those on the Fannie Mae site. You can call the Fannie Mae Foundation, and they'll send you a copy for free. There's three publications they have. The one I'm the most familiar with is Choosing the Mortgage That's Right for You. It's a good read publication. It's great for first-time homebuyers, and it'll go over the income calculations that I went over previously. So get yourself a copy of that. But you should always call two or three lenders and make yourself up a cheat sheet so that you're asking the same questions of all three lenders. You know, what's your interest rate? What's your APR? What's your doc prep fee? What's your underwriting fee? What's your processing fee? Are there any other fees? And make three columns and have a column for each lender that you talk to so that you compare apples to apples here. When it's time to do your loan application, now these days it's a little bit different from when I did home loans for about 5 years. There was no internet application back in 1994, believe it or not. I did do some internet business, but very limited. Everyone came to your office, sat down in front of you, and you filled out a Fannie Mae form 1003 and asked them all the questions, and you filled in the form and went from there. These days you can do that stuff online, so you can get a hold of a mortgage company and complete your application online. At some point you're probably going to possibly have to go into the office if it's a local company, or at least mail them the information to back up your loan application. But be prepared. A lender's going to want to look at and view, go over your last 2 years' information, including income, residence, and so on and so forth. They're going to look at your credit report. So if you have any credit issues, you want to be prepared to explain what happened and why it isn't an issue anymore. Once you get all that documentation to your lender, you're going to get probably a pre-qualification until they get your full credit report and until they start getting some of the verifications of employment, verifications of rent if you're renting, and so on and so forth come back in. You're going to be in a pre-qualified status versus a full approval status. The approval typically won't come until about a week prior to closing. That's when everything is finished. It's submitted to an underwriter, and then the underwriter makes a final decision, and you go to close about a week later. There's some cases where it's hours prior, but that's not a good situation. So if you're well prepared and you get everything to your lender early, you should get your approval well before your closing date. You want to ask, and you should understand what fees are involved in applying for a loan. For instance, there may be a requirement to send appraisal money, $300 to $350. You might have to prepay for your credit report, which in reality is it should be a mortgage report. And depending on the mortgage company, they run anywhere from $15 to $55. A mortgage report, which is a three-bureau merged report in Oklahoma, runs about $55. At the time of application, and an application is when you filled out a 1003 and you provided the lender with everything that they've requested, you have completed a formal loan application. The lender has 3 days to provide you with a good faith estimate and a truth in lending form. It's a federal requirement. The good faith estimate is going to show you all the fees involved in getting and purchasing a home. They are an estimate, but they should be within a reasonable amount of money of what you're going to see at closing. And if you're working with a real estate company, the real estate company is going to provide you with a buyer's estimate of expenses. And so you can compare those two documents, and they should be within a couple hundred dollars. If the lender is $500 less or $500 more, then you might want to ask one of those parties, why is there such a discrepancy? And see, I know as a realtor, I estimate real high when I give an estimate to a buyer. Because if they're going to have a problem coming up with $2,000, I want to know that early. I'd rather be a good guy at closing and they're bringing less than be a bad guy and have to call them hours prior to closing and say, oh, you know that $500 I said you needed? Well, you really need $1,500. So it's better to estimate a little bit high. The truth in lending statement is a document that shows you the cost of doing business. It's got some boxes. It's got four or five boxes on it. It's going to show you how much you're financing, how much is subject to interest, how much interest you're going to pay over the term of the loan, 30-year loan, and then it's going to have a combined box showing you how much you paid for the house after 30 years. So if you're buying a $100,000 house, it's going to be a $400,000 house by the time you pay it off. Also on that Truth in Lending form is the APR. Very important figure, and I've got a little spiel here on how to understand why that APR is so important. The little example I like to use is, let's say you call me and say, Ed, I need to borrow $100. How much are you going to charge me? And I say, all right, well, the interest rate's going to be 8%. I don't have any fees, so you're going to pay me back $108 at the end of the year. The interest rate in this case would be 8%, and so is the APR. APR is going to be 8% as well because you're paying me back $108. You say, okay, well, I need to shop around because I think I can do better than that. So you call lender B and you tell them the same thing, and they say, okay, well, our interest rate is 7.5%. But we have a $2.50 processing fee, so at the end of the year, you're going to pay me back a total of $110. In this particular case, the interest rate would be 7.5%, but the APR, the annual percentage rate, is 10% because you've actually paid back 110% of the original loan amount. So which is the better deal? Well, even though the interest rate on the first deal was higher, the overall deal on the second one was higher because you're actually paying back $2 more, even though you have a lower interest rate. That's why it's important to compare lenders by APR, not necessarily interest rate. If they have a low interest rate but a lot of fees, you may end up actually paying more for that loan than you would for a slightly higher interest rate and no fees. So you really need to understand and take advantage of APR. One of the important things in determining loan availability is your credit score. Credit scores range between 300 and 900. Scores below 580 typically will require some additional justification. You may have to write some letters of why you had some late payments or take care of collections. You know, there may be some other thing, judgments, so on and so forth. Scores over 620 usually mean an automatic approval. That means that you'll go in, you'll do the deal, and the lender's probably not going to ask you for any additional documentation on your credit report. Your credit score may affect your interest rate. So if you have a particularly low score, below 580, you may be looking at a slightly higher interest rate because your risk factor is higher. If you have a real high credit score, you're going to qualify for one of the lowest interest rates, and the lender's going to want to do business with you, so you might be able to strike a better deal. When you get your good faith estimate from the lender, you want to look to see what fees are on there, like origination and discount points. Origination fees are typically 1% of the loan amount. So if you're getting a $100,000 loan, you might see an origination fee of $1,000 on your good faith estimate. Discount points are, it's really prepaid interest to get a better rate. I am not an advocate, nor do I typically recommend to a buyer to pay origination and discount points simply to get a lower interest rate. If you're working with a lender that typically charges an origination fee and have the same interest rates as everyone else, you might want to shop around and find a lender that will do the same interest rate with no origination fee or discount points. There's a lot of people, when I was doing loans, wanted to buy down their rate. They wanted a lower interest rate and were willing to pay origination and discount points. And that's good if you know for sure you're going to be in that home for more than 5 years, because there's a 5-year break-even point. And for instance, if you were to be able to get an interest rate of 6% with no origination or discount points, or you could get a 5% rate and have to pay 3 points or $3,000, but the difference in payment was only $50, then it would take you 60 months to break even. So for the first 60 months, you're just paying to break even. After the 60th month is when you start making money by having a lower interest rate. And really what it is prepaid interest. The point here is if you're not going to be in the home for at least 5 years, do not pay origination or discount points to get a lower rate. Be familiar with what the lender fees are. Lenders can tack on a whole bunch of different fees: funding fees, doc prep, underwriting, tax service, processing, and they're going to be different by lender. So make sure when you're calling around to figure out which is the best deal that you ask specifically ask lenders what their fees are. You'll hear the term prepaid items. Those are taxes and insurance. So at closing, you're going to pay 14 months of homeowner's insurance and typically 4 months of taxes. So they're going to supercharge your escrow account so that at the end of the year, you're not going to be short. Now, depending on the time of the year that you close will be how much money is put into your escrow account. At closing, your insurance company is going to get a check for 12 months. So your insurance is paid 12 months in advance. And then the balance is going to go into your escrow account. But on taxes, if you close in the month of October, the seller is going to pay from the 1st of January to the day of closing, and they're going to credit that to you, and then you're going to put in additional money so that your escrow account has sufficient money in there to pay a full year's taxes at the end of the year. So that's what prepaid items are. I like to bring up the difference between an appraisal and an inspection because a lot of people are under the misconception that the appraiser is doing an inspection of the home. They're not. An appraiser's out there to establish value. Now, if they see something that may affect value, they may require that it be repaired before a lender will loan money on the house. So there are some cases where there'll be appraisal requirements for repairs on a home for you to be able to get a loan. But it's not an inspection. And it has to be real obvious in most cases for an appraiser to write something up. Some appraisers these days ask for a copy of the inspection report, and mysteriously some of the inspection write-ups appear in the appraisal. We don't do that. We don't provide the appraiser with a copy of the inspection report. Number one, you can't in Oklahoma. The buyer has to agree to that, and typically they don't. The appraiser is going to compare the sales of the most recent sales in the area to the house that you're trying to buy. So that they're going to go out and try to find at least three homes that have sold that are comparable to the one that you want to buy and that have sold within the last 6 months to a year. But again, remember, this does not replace a home inspection. Anytime you buy a home, you should get a full home inspection. In most cases, a lender is going to require that you pay for the appraisal at the time of application or at least before the appraisal is completed. Because that's a third-party fee for them. The appraiser doesn't work for the mortgage company. When the appraisal comes in, after everything's calculated and the appraisal is finished, don't be surprised if the appraised value of the home that you're buying, even though you're getting a great deal, is at the same amount that you're paying for the house. So if you're paying $100,000, you know for sure it's worth $150,000. Don't be surprised if the appraisal comes in at $100,000. Most appraisers aren't going to go out on a limb and say, hey, yeah, it's worth $150,000. There's no reason to. It's really worth what you're paying for it. So it's either going to be at or possibly below the selling price of the home. If it's below, obviously you have a problem and you have to go back into negotiation with the seller to figure out how much they're really willing to let the house go for. I wanted to talk about down payment assistance also in this segment. There are several avenues if you don't have money for your own down payment to get some kind of assistance. And the best time for that to come up is at your loan application or when you first sit down with a realtor and someone gives you an estimate of what it's going to cost you to purchase a home. If they give you an estimate and you need $3,300.55 and you look at it and say, hey, you know, the 55 cents is no problem. It's the $3,300 I don't have. Now, that's a good time to bring that up. So either the mortgage company or the realtor can go start finding sources of down payment. And there are a lot for first-time home buyers in any community. Most of them have income limits. So if you make too much money, you're probably not going to qualify for the program. They're going to expect you to have your own down payment. Most are designed to enhance home ownership in specific areas. For instance, in Oklahoma City, we have a neighborhood revitalization strategy area. That's an area around the center of Oklahoma City that the city government is trying to encourage people to move into. So they provide, in some cases, $3,500, other cases $6,000, depending on how bad the area is, I guess, to enhance, to entice people to come in and move and live in those areas. So your city local governments should have some down payment programs. Your housing authorities will probably have down payment assistance programs. Community action agencies will have down payment assistance programs. There may be some nonprofits that have down payment assistance. So there's going to be several sources of down payment assistance. Some are grants and some are second mortgages. If it's a grant, typically there's a residency requirement, 5 to 9 years you have to stay in that property before it's forgiven. If it's a second mortgage, typically it's 5 years. If you stay in the home for 5 years, it's automatically forgiven, so that if you sell the home in the sixth year, you don't have to pay any of that money back. Some do have penalties up to 9 years. The penalties aren't severe. On our bond programs, there's a calculation, and basically you have to be in a windfall category before you have to pay anything back. So basically you have to make a real killing on the house. Well, if you make a real killing on the house, who cares if you have to pay back a couple thousand dollars at closing? It's still worth using that money. But know what you're getting. Study the read the documents. Other types of down payment programs, Genesis and Nehemiah, those are getting tougher. FHA has kind of come down hard on those. Those are programs where the seller makes a donation to a nonprofit agency, and then the nonprofit provides the down payment and closing costs for the buyer. HUD doesn't like those anymore. They're coming down real hard on them, so they may be harder to get. But the nice thing about those is there is no income requirements. There's no liens. It's strictly a grant. It doesn't have to be paid back. In Oklahoma, we've got what's called a rural enterprises, and this may be a national program. Of course, I've not checked into that, but the number for them, if you get ready with a pen here, is 800-811-3761. And if you're not in Oklahoma, just ask them if they have down payment assistance for the community that you're in. There are no first-time homebuyer requirements. Income limits for Oklahoma are up to $61,000, and here it's available in 72 counties, so that's most of the state. So that's a pretty good program, but it's for rural. It's outside of city limits. The most prevalent down payment assistance programs that we use in Oklahoma are county and state bond programs. A bond program is like stocks and bonds. It's a portfolio put together, sold on the market to generate dollars for state agencies to fund home loans. Most of them are 4% down payment assistance, usually only for first-time home buyers. There are a couple of counties here that you don't have to be a first-time home buyer. A first-time home buyer is someone who has not owned a home in the last 3 years. And we run into this military a lot. We'll go overseas and come back, go overseas for 4 years, come back, they're a first-time home buyer again because they have not owned a home for the last 3 years. Income limits up to $62,000 in Oklahoma County, maximum purchase price $190,000, and some of these numbers are different for target areas. If you're in a target area within that NRSA that I talked about, the income limits go up and the purchase price goes up as well. Bond programs do have a recapture clause within the first 9 years, but it's generous. I mean, you have to make a lot of money on a deal to have to pay some back within the first 9 years. Most lenders participate in the state program because there's no requirement to buy the money. You pay a fee to participate and just originate the loans. There's no minimum, no maximum until they run out of money. In a county program, the county requires that the lender actually buy a block of money, $2 or $3 million worth, and that mortgage company's got to originate those loans or they eat that money. And so lenders get a little bit nervous because in a time of fluctuating interest rates, if the bond program comes out at 6% and all of a sudden rates drop to 5.5%, nobody wants the bond money. So you'll find most people, most lenders like to do the state rather than the county issues. Other forms of down payment assistance could be the type of loan that you look at. There are 100% loans and even 103% loans. Here locally, Bank of Oklahoma's got a killer 103% loan. There's no PMI on that loan. You don't have to do the full 103%. If you had a small down payment, my suggestion is to look into that type of loan so that you don't have to pay the PMI. Usually you need a credit score of at least 700. There is an income limit, and again, here in Oklahoma, it's $48,080 a year. Again, no down payment required. You can finance your closing costs. The seller still can contribute some towards your closing costs. Again, no down payment required, so there's no problem there. When a lender tells you they've got a 100 or 103% loan, make sure it's not a combination of two loans, like an 80% first and a 20% or 23% second, because typically that second mortgage is going to be a higher interest rate and possibly an adjustable rate. So you want one fixed rate 100% loan. When I was doing loans, I used to use a program called the Mortgage Credit Certificate Program. Here we call it the MCC. This was a great program for people who had a tax liability at the end of the year. It can save up to $2,000 per year in taxes. What it does is it reduces your monthly tax bill. For instance, if you had $200 being withheld in federal taxes, you refile so that they don't withhold that $200. So effectively, it increases your monthly take-home pay. It has nothing to do with your house payment. Some lenders say, oh yeah, it reduces your house payment. It does not have anything to do with a house payment. It's strictly how much taxes are being withheld from your pay on a monthly basis. But you can only benefit from this program if you pay taxes. If you don't have a tax liability, the program doesn't work for you. What they'll do is you'll go down to the MCC Corporation in your local area, bring 3 years of tax returns, they'll do an analysis, and they'll be able to tell you whether or not you can benefit from the program. It used to cost $1,000 to get into the program, which, oh, by the way, you can ask the seller to pay for at closing as part of your negotiation on your contract. And then there's a $12.50 per month maintenance fee as long as you're on that program. You do have to have a checking or a savings account because it must be drafted out of an account. There is a maximum income of $55,200 in Oklahoma, maximum sales price of $128,322, again in Oklahoma County. Each county is slightly different because it's based on the median income for that county. But if you have an MCC program in your area, definitely look into it. It's a great program. It'll save money. And the nice thing is it's good for the life of the loan. The other areas you can check with your neighborhood services and your city programs. Again, most cities have areas that they're trying to repopulate and draw people to live into. So they're probably going to have some down payment assistance programs for inner city as well. Community action agencies. In a lot of cases, the community action agency money is the same money that the city's using. It all comes from HUD. It's called home dollars. And a lot of times they'll just split it. They'll give $10 million to the city, $10 million to the community action agency, and so that money will be available. But some programs, they're administered differently. I know in this area, community action agency is a lot easier to get through their program than it is with the city. The city's tougher. After they're originated, they're administered the same. All the dollars for areas are the same. Everything else is the same except for the process itself. There might be some lender-specific programs you can look into as well. I know here in MidFirst Bank has got what's called a 60-40 program. It's a rehab-type situation where they'll fund so much percentage of the rehab. So if you're looking at a fixer-upper, you might check with the bank to see if they have that type of program. GMAC Mortgage has an FHA loan with a 4% down payment assistance, always. They never run out of that. Countrywide has some expanded mortgages. I know Bank of Oklahoma's got the 100 and 103%, but there's a lot of lenders that cater to first-time home buyers and low-income buyers, so don't be afraid to ask if there are some specific programs that might benefit you. Nonprofit organizations, that's a little bit tougher. They don't always have money, and when they do have money, it's going to be low amounts, but if you could get $300 to pay for an appraisal, might as well. It's a grant. until we don't have to pay those people back. So 100% of the time, if you're going to use down payment assistance, you're going to be required to attend a first-time homebuyer program. The class that we teach is on Saturdays. It's 8 hours. And then when you leave there, you get a certificate. You take that certificate to the Community Action Agency or to the city agencies to show that you've been through the class, and that helps you qualify for the down payment assistance. That about wraps it up for the loan process. Our next segment is going to be on covering real estate. It'll show you how to, we'll talk about selecting a real estate agent, resources for finding homes, things to consider before selecting an area to live in, and then review important areas of the contract to make sure that you understand what you're signing before you sign it. So I hope you enjoyed this segment. If you have questions, please give us a call at area code 405-606-8442 or email. My email address is McNamara, that's McNamara, at OKCRealtors.com. Let us know what your questions are, and we'll address those in the next segment.